Welcome to the Mumbrella Podcast from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. This week, more angry rugby league sponsors, Kmart speedy crisis PR, the bank that's got digital marketing nailed, radio, good news for Austereo, but not for Nova in Sydney, magazines start changing hands. Joining me as usual, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alicon and Scott Rohde of PR Agency House Party. Hey, welcome along. So first, rugby league team, the Newcastle Knights, they're in the PR firing line over drug allegations, which rarely a week or certainly not a month seems to go but without some sort of sporting scandal. But it's always the story almost becomes, and it's become the automatic thing, what do the sponsors think? Camille, what's the situation?
Well, at the moment, a second player has been charged drug-related charges, closely off the back of one at the end of last year, Danny Wicks.
Which isn't very brand or family-friendly.
No, I mean, you would like to... you would think that the Knights is a bit... They're kind of marketing poison right now, really, aren't they? Their main sponsors are McDonald's, Energy Australia, NIB, Blue Tongue Beer, and Colon Allied.
So blue chip sponsors, which then I suppose raises the question, Scott... why sponsor sport if it's always trouble?
Well, you're not sponsoring the player, you're sponsoring the team. And yeah, you're always going to get, I mean, let's be honest here, you get a bunch of young guys with far too much money and a lot of time in their hands because they're just, and they're sportsmen, they're going to end up doing stuff. It's happened, the last 50 years there's been sportsmen doing drugs, having orgies, you name it, you know.
So why do sponsors...
Because they want the coverage on on sports channels. They want their name plastered over whenever there's a good interview done or anything like that. And it's just one of those things. They'll keep sponsoring sport. I don't see it ever going away. And to be honest, yes, the name gets tarnished by a player, but does the sponsor get tarnished? I've never really thought so at times.
It's
one of those strange things. I think if you sponsor a team, then you've chosen. And you're doing it through thick and thin.
And the other thing, I suppose, is it becomes this self-fulfilling thing where the story becomes everyone looking at the sponsor, and that's what makes the sponsor nervous, rather than the incident or the scandal at the time. And I guess the other thing is it's a hard to reach audience. You know, the sort of people who watch sport. You know, young beer drinking men. There aren't many other media outlets to reliably reach them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean. It's one of those. I mean, every time I see something like this happen, which is virtually weekly these days,
and Tiger Woods being the biggest profile sporting, stuff up.
And lost sponsors as a result.
But I think the difference is Tiger Woods is an individual being sponsored versus this is a team being sponsored, and I think that's a difference. You know, if these players had their own individual sponsorships, then I would understand fully if a company decided to pull their sponsorship from them. But I don't think when it's a team concern.
But what if it's, it seems to be an endemic problem, perhaps, some would argue, about issues to do with behaviour and code of conduct.
As I said, that's always going to happen.
But that means that the whole brand is affected, surely, if the player is representing the brand ambassadors for the Knights.
I think every player's a brand ambassador, but I still think it's the team as a whole that they're sponsoring, not individuals.
But surely the behaviour of the individuals... one-off is a
one-off. Well, they shouldn't be doing anything wrong, but let's be honest here, they're going to.
But there is a point at which it impacts on the team, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, there is. I mean, there is. And, the boss should be kicking it in their arses at the moment and that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, this is arguably an example of sort of bad PR, but this week we saw a classic example of certainly what I reckon, and, Scott, you might have your own view, but I reckon was good crisis PR, was Kmart applied to open on Anzac Day before 1 o'clock, where, of course, usually the shops are closed, got a lot of flak for it, but then there was a very rapid and quite well-executed U-turn.
No, absolutely. Let's be honest here, the best PR in action is the one that you don't have to react to.
So where was the? In fact, so for people who don't know, there was a statement came out from Kmart, basically apologising, saying they got it wrong, apologising to the people who were annoyed, and also from the boss saying personally, I stuffed up with the word I in there. So to me, that seemed like the smart bit. But
yeah, absolutely.
You're saying it shouldn't have happened in the first place.
You should have the smarts in a company like Kmart, especially where you think, let's take some time to honour, the fallen soldiers, and you know, I don't think there's anything. The moment you come up with that whole let's open pre 1 o'clock, was it, I think it was?
Yeah, although the message that in the statement that followed was, you know, our customers wanted the convenience of having it available.
Did they ask their customers? Well, that's what I want to know. I mean, if you're going to come out with a statement like that, did you go to your customers and say, are you happy with us opening at 11 o'clock in the morning when Anzac Day's on?
Mm.
You know, I mean, did their customers ask for it?
Now, in this backlash, and this is slightly getting off the PR points, I do drag us back to it in a moment, Camille, but one of the points I read on The Punch, actually, there's something like 400 or 500 comments, where someone's made the point, okay, everyone who's made a pious comment must guarantee that morning you don't go and buy petrol, you don't pop to the convenience store to buy the newspaper, you go to the dawn service, or you stay at home, because there is sometimes the hypocrisy of the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a difference between stores that are open 24 hours, which are always open, even on Christmas Day, that kind of thing, which is your service station, versus your store choosing to open at an earlier time solely to make money during a time when people are, you know.
But do you not think maybe we're... Camille, do you not think maybe we're getting this sort of social media mob now? It's easy to have today's scandal. Everyone on Twitter, you know, retweets about how outraged they are, or, you know, posts, you know, their one contribution is the 30 seconds they take to write an angry comment on a blog, for instance.
No, I mean, it's just another avenue, whether it's social media, whether it's a letter to the editor, it's just another avenue. I think it's more a case of, I mean, retailers have a history of pushing the boundaries and trying to open when they can, just to make more money. I mean, yeah. And when you think about the marketing in stores for Easter gets earlier every year, for Christmas gets earlier every year. You know, that's just how they operate.
Okay. Well, given that they found themselves in this situation, from that point onwards,
reacted very admirably. I mean, they coming out and, you know, getting out an apology as soon as they did. You know, you got to respect they actually came out quickly and reacted as fast as they could, which is what companies should be doing. They really need to make sure that the message is out there as soon as possible.
Okay. Changing topics again, it was the Mumbrellia.
Mumbrellia?
It's our new spin-off, actually, yes. I'm pleased to announce it here for the first time.
Can you tell us what it's about, please?
I will, as soon as I've decided. It was the Mumbrella Question Time Forum this week, and one of the big topics was digital marketing. It's something... it's been, you know, yet again a big week for AMI Awards on Friday night. Find out who's won that that's in Melbourne. But something we posted about, which drew a few comments this week, was CommBank. The fact that, you know, they're sort of sneaking up and doing some quite interesting things in digital at the moment. The thing that drew my attention to it was something which I think it was the White Agency had created for them. This sort of just little video, which you'll find either on Mumbrella or on YouTube, of their sort of vision for 2013 and how customers will be. But the thing that sort of fascinated me was that you've got brands getting into content creation now, and the fact that it's a big bank as well.
Where it needs to be. I mean, it's funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday whose problem is they have too much content. But most of the companies I talk to at the moment all want to get into this content creation space. And you see a lot of the agencies going down that route as well at the moment, where they're needing to have people on site who can create content. And it's creativity and it's content creation. It's where the future is going to be.
And then once you've created the content, how do you get it out there?
Yeah, that's where my job is. it varies depending on the content as well. I mean, you know, the best thing to do is plot it from the beginning. So you've got to plot the creative, plot the content. But before you do any of that is, who are you aiming at? Who's your demographic? And what kind of things do they want to see and enjoy? And then it's after you've went through the whole process, it's then actually getting it out to them and helping them push the message out further.
Camille?
Yeah, no, I mean, content creation in terms of marketers, that's not new. We've been seeing that for a few years. I guess it is, as you were saying, it's just more that we're seeing more of it, and instead of partnering with media companies, they're making the content themselves. So absolutely, it's about having an agency that knows how to lead the strategy behind it. Otherwise, it could just be a whole bunch of content, and how's it going to help the brand?
Yeah. That's the funny thing, isn't it, where you see something, you know, the classic and slightly obvious option, but something that people are still doing is the upload it to YouTube and then it doesn't go viral.
Yeah. You see a lot of companies think that once it goes on YouTube, that's it. They share it with a bunch of their friends and it goes kind of nowhere, and that's, you know, that's not the best usage of your clients' money or your time, really. I mean, if you don't have the ability to push something out, then chances are something like, was it 97% of virals or 99% of them don't go anywhere?
Well, but there are a lot of pedants who hate the way that people would describe them as virals.
Well, I know.
Case.
So I would say a video or a piece of content creation has potential to go virally. That's
yeah,
the correct
it's not
way
snappy
to say.
Though, is it? Really?
No, it isn't. But I don't like to use the term viral either. It sounds wanky.
And you can't really say ad where we haven't got a TV budget. Just sounds a bit kind of over cynical. Of course, here's a link and a half for you from TV. And sometimes when people can't afford TV, they look to radio.
Oh, God, you're terrible.
Speaking of which,
our
most discussed posting this week was a guest one from Simon Corbett, who you may know him as a regular commenter on Mumbrella as Mr. Corbett. He is a Bellamy Hayden, a strategy agency, and he wrote quite a provocative piece arguing that Nova's Merrick Watts should call it a day.
Here we go now.
On
Nova.
Merrick Tools and Ricky Lee.
Are we having fun yet?
I was a bit naughty the other day. Actually, really? I wasn't naughty. I was a bit Australian and did what we all do in an office and robbed something from work.
Yeah, I do it all the time. You know, I take reflex paper from here and take it to my other office.
Really?
No, that's stealing, Ricky Lee.
I was wondering why your bag was that size.
I guess it just wants the context of Nova's most recent set of ratings, I guess, Camille, which were a bit disappointing.
Last week with the latest set of ratings, and as to be expected, the new breakfast team in Nova Sydney was pretty low in terms of the ratings.
A new team.
So it's Merrick Watts, Ricky Lee Coulter, Scott Dooley, ex-Triple J. So a new team, because Rosso left last year, and we expected a drop. And so Nova didn't seem surprised that they had a fall in ratings.
Arguably a bigger drop, maybe, than one might have expected.
I think
they're halved, pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know. It will take 6 months, perhaps, to see, you know, be a real indication of how it's going.
And in fairness, the initial sort of headline numbers that come out that we get our hands on as the press are a percentage share figure, in any given time slot, any given demographic, and what the stations have their hands on already, and we only get hands on a few days later, is the actual reach in terms of numbers of people, which I think was something like 500,000 for them across, mm-hmm. Across the time period, which is something that they can kind of work on, but it's just persuading people to come back more often and tune in longer. Anyway, the argument Simon Corbett was making there was, having listened, it's just clear that Merrick's not having fun. If you listen to it, you know, it sounds a bit forced, not Merrick and Rosso as it was at his best.
It's interesting, though, because Simon's, as he says in the piece, he's not a big commercial radio listener. So, I mean, how well did he know the Merrick and Rosso team last year by comparison to this year?
Yes, well, Merrick did drop by and leave a comment making that point. I'm so sorry that based on your occasional listening, you had the horror and disappointment when you eventually dropped by to listen, which was a fair point. I mean,
you should berate your listeners. That's a bit harsh.
Occasional as they are. I mean, I speak as someone who hasn't listened to the show much myself, but I have downloaded a couple of the podcasts, and funnily enough, beforehand, I really thought this is, you know, they're not gelling that well. And then after the ratings came out, I kind of thought, oh, I'm just going to listen to one more. And actually, I quite enjoyed it, and it felt.
Yeah.
I forget what the topics were, but the most recent podcast that's just up, which obviously is the best of the show, so you know clearly it's not the same as listening for the whole breakfast show. But I actually felt that there was something a bit more to it. It was a bit more spontaneous.
Yeah.
They were, you know,
it just takes a while for people to bed in when I mean, if you look. Listeners can go listen to our first podcasts and feel our, you know.
Oh, please don't.
Yeah,
listeners,
I know, but
do not
and you can
waste
feel,
your
and then
time.
The dynamic changes over time.
Say, but by that, you're implying we've made some form of progress.
No, I love this. I do love this line here. I'll read a little bit out from Simon's piece. The forced hilarity, the awkward pauses, the sheer desperation that leaks out of the speakers truly makes me cringe. Do you think people actually think that about us, though?
I try not to
think.
It
did actually occur to me when I read that.
I just try not to think what people think about us. That's the best way to do it.
But what it does raise the point, and this is one of the things that Simon Corbett was making as the wider point, is sometimes it is time to call it a day. And how do you know, as a person or as a brand, whatever, when that moment comes?
Let's go around. Let's make a prediction as we do how long they'll be together.
Yeah,
for.
But I'm not talking so much about Merrick. I'm just talking generally.
The team itself, I mean.
I'm just talking about that. Should you as a brand, whatever it is, know when your moment comes?
You mean go out in a high rather than a low?
But Merrick as a brand.
No, not Merrick as a brand. A brand generally.
A brand generally. All right.
Okay. I think it's a tough one. I mean, I think you always want to go out in a high, but fact is that most people, when they're getting paid well and they're doing well, they just think, I'll just keep clinging on for as long as possible. Mm. And then, you know, you end up seeing them at that. The Britney phase, I suppose, where you kind of go, ooh, no, is that where they've gone now?
Yeah.
Britney syndrome, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I wonder...
Sorry, Britney.
I mean, I wonder actually whether the likes of...
I think she's listening.
You never know.
We suddenly seem to be becoming very self-conscious this week of who might be listening. I suppose the other one that I sort of think of is something like the Hey Hey reunion did very well for the couple of ratings when it came back. It's now coming back properly later this year. I've got a funny feeling that all... Fizzle away.
Yeah. You know, people have got nostalgia for it, but when they see the new show, it'll just be the stand-up.
Yeah, so again, it's like, should they have just gone out on that high? You know, and we'll be proved wrong, obviously, if they do massively well. But you do get the sense that people just, that diminishing returns thing. Lots of moves for magazine ownership this week. ACP bought Recipes Plus. Switzer bought Rush. Camille, you've been the one who's been writing all of these stories. So what's it mean? Why is everyone buying magazines all of a sudden? Is it magazines being in trouble and being sold cheap? Or is it that suddenly everyone's valuing them again, do you reckon?
No, I think it's all a very different case for very different reasons. So, for example, News magazines decided to get on the MasterChef bandwagon. So launching MasterChef, the magazine, in May.
And News mags are already very dominant in the food sector.
Exactly. Well, they are. They have about a 67% share. And now ACP is trying to get in on the action. Currently, it has a premium food and wine title, Gourmet Traveler. It's got a aspirational middle ground publication called Good Food. And now it's kind of wanting to reach into the mass market with the acquisition of Recipes Plus.
So that'll be where the Coles ads go, I guess, and Woolworths and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's mass market type. Well, don't forget as well, there's the Woolworths Australian Good Taste for News Mags and Superfood Ideas. They're two big circulating magazines. So lots of movements. Well, okay. Basically, it's a very buoyant sector within publishing as well. So let's not forget that.
Well, that's one interesting sector. Another one is Rush. Now, what's that all about?
Rush is an independent. It was launched just a few years ago, so it's a bi-monthly fashion culture magazine aimed at about 18 to 30-year-olds. Basically, Switzer, this kind of smaller custom publishing.
Well, I was thinking,
I thought
business facing as well. So I was a bit surprised to see where it ended up.
Yeah. Well, they've launched...
You talked to them. What was their explanation for how it was going to be a fit?
Well, basically, they're running it as a separate operation, so under Rush Media. So it won't be just within Switzer. It's actually going to be run separately. So they see it as very much their big kind of consumer-facing publication. And very much they're about... Switzer is about, if you're not very familiar with them, creating content for clients, whether it's online or press. So they're all about content creation anyway. So for them, I suppose they saw that, you know, this is a publication that's doing well. It did see an uplift in circulation in the previous audit period. So why not?
Scott, magazines on the way back.
Yeah,
climbing the hill.
We'll see.
You sound slightly cynical.
Look, I think there's always going to be some magazines that'll do well. I think that there's some areas where the market's too crowded and you'll see the weaker ones fall by the wayside.
Okay, well, look, finally... Another much-discussed video this week was TAC, Transport Accident Commission, their compilation of 20 years of safety messages. So that's in Victoria, mostly an agency called Grey does almost all of their stuff. It's one of those videos that until you watch it, it's hard to fully understand the impact. Just this powerful sort of 4 or 5 minute, greatest hits is a completely bad way of putting it, really.
Five-minute retrospective.
Montage retrospective. I prefer all of those phrases to greatest hits. With the tune Everybody Hurts, the REM song. And it kind of just shows the build-up to accidents themselves and the consequences of them. And Camille, it's powerful stuff.
It is. Basically, the first ad aired in 1989, so 20 years, over 150 ads. That was put into this montage and lots of different clips from it. And you really get a sense of just how powerful these images are when you actually remember from my childhood some of these images. Because I know it's Victoria, but it has resonated, you know, across the country. And obviously, after going on YouTube, it's even had some responses from overseas as well. But just, and I hate to use the word iconic when I'm discussing advertising, but some of the advertising is quite iconic. And even the tagline, "If you drink, then drive, you're a bloody idiot." Like, everyone knows that line. So we know it has worked, and it's really made an impact. And it's for a good cause as well. It's great to see these kinds of ads and going viral as well.
More than a million views.
Mm-hmm. Much more than a million views. It's just quite haunting and emotive. I think I would, you know, tell everyone to go online and check it out, because especially during coming up to the Easter period when we have all these road fatalities, you know, we need these kinds of messages going out there. And
Scott,
really good creative.
Social media for good.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the content is compelling to watch, so that gives it that impetus for people to share, and that's one of the keys to it, I think. But as long as it gets, you know, that message needs to go out to Australians so much, because I come from the UK, and when I moved to Australia, I was gobsmacked the amount of people I found out who actually drink and drive in Australia. It seems to be endemic, and especially in the western suburbs, that kind of stuff. That's no offence to people in the western suburbs, I'm just saying that's where I've seen it the most. And it's, you know, it's in the UK, we're brought up to you don't drink and drive, and it does happen, but it seems to happen a lot less than over here. And I think if the more people get this message that if you drink and drive, that you know, might take not only your own life, your friends' lives, but, you know, random people's lives, then you really need to stop boozing and driving.
Well, just finally, I think we've got time for one more, which was, it was the Mumbrella question time this week. Glad to say that Scott and Camille and myself were all there, as might be expected, I suppose. Now, one of the issues that we kind of returned to again was this question of how you measure how good an agency is and how you rank it, which I know we've touched upon here before. But one of the things I was struck on was that nobody really seemed to know the answer.
I don't think there is an answer. I think every agency is different. I mean, so how do you judge? How do you judge an agency with three people who solely concentrate on creative against an agency who solely do digital? I mean, how do you then start mashing them all up together and come up with this hot and cold list, which I disagree with? I think you'd have to sit and come up with the most complex rating system in the world. Otherwise, you just start shooting bloody or throwing darts at a board with names on it and think, oh, that's the one I want to win.
Camille, how would you go about it?
No, it's really hard. I mean, for me, I just respond better to effectiveness awards, so the Effies. That's just me. That's very much a personal thing, because I don't know what the answer is, but in terms of what I get impressed about are Effie awards.
But don't forget, even then, they need a criteria. They need to have a method of deciding who their winners are, who they list as their winners.
Yeah, it's based around effectiveness. I don't.
Yes, but how do you prove effectiveness? You know, there still has to be a score given, and that's the thing, isn't it?
To be honest, a lot of times I've seen people win awards or spoke to people that won awards. Most of the time it's how much time they've invested in putting together the presentation to say, here's my award entry.
That's always been something people say, you know, some agencies win more awards because they actually hire someone to create a really great application and submission, and that does help. Yes,
I know of a few agencies that have done that.
Go on, who?
I'm not willing to say, I just know. And they do. A lot, and I've seen a lot of companies, I've seen staff in agencies, and I've heard of staff in agencies work until midnight to get award to get the details down pat.
Isn't that about getting your best foot forward?
It is, yeah, and it's about PRing yourself. But on the flip side, I've seen client work fall by the wayside to ensure that the awards thing get done, and I think that's not right.
Well, that's all we have time for. So thanks to our weekly commentators, Camille Alacon.
Thank you.
And Scott Rohde.
Thanks, Tim.
From House Party and to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Podcast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle.